The progress and challenges of health technology assessments, or HTA, are relevant to regulatory experts within authorities and within companies across the life cycle of products throughout Europe. The HTA theme of DIA's 28th annual Euro meeting overviews topics standing at a crossroads of regulatory, traditional HTA, and payer discussions, enabling attendees to understand current policy discussions and contribute to future policy debates. I am Alberto Grignolo, deputy editor for the DIA Global Forum magazine. I'm here with Edith Frenois, director of market access and HTA for the European Federation of Pharmaceutical Industries Associations, Belgium, and co-lead for our Euromeeting HTA theme. We are delighted to have this opportunity to discuss these topics with Edith. Welcome, and thank you for your time today. My first question is the following. More systematic or structured benefit risk analysis has been a hot topic in pharmaceutical research, development, and regulation. Are there similar or related initiatives for more systematic or structured benefit risk analysis in HTA?
So I think the answer depends on what exactly we mean by more systematic or structured benefit risk analysis. But what I would link it to, which is a hot topic in the HTA world, is really this collaboration on HTA and what HTA agencies could do jointly and therefore have a more common methodology, a more systematic approach to HTA than they have today. What we see today is HTA agencies which have developed over time historically very differently in different countries. It's national competence of member states that support in general pricing and reimbursement, what HTA agencies do. And they have developed over time simply because of their being rooted in national healthcare systems, they have developed differently. They have the similar objectives, and they are there to help what we call access decisions, but have different remits and different methods. So that's why there has been some attempts over the years, and I think everybody knows now the acronym UNETA and the network of HTA agencies that has been around for about 10 years. And there they have tried to see how can we get the methodologies, the different methodologies closer to each other, and what can we do as the HTA agencies, what can they do jointly together. So in terms of what is most similar to benefit risk as an analysis, if you look at what HTA agencies do, obviously they do very different words for this, but they want to know what a new treatment and a new pharmaceutical, let's say, brings in more, how are they better compared to the options that are available today? And that, you can say it's added therapeutic value, or you call it relative effectiveness, or you call it, there are many different terminologies for the same concept, let's say. And I think what UNETA has been doing in particular, one of the activities is really to see whether different HTA agencies can do assessment of the therapeutic added value together. And they have been focusing on this, what they have called rapid relative effectiveness assessments. So I would say, you know, what is most similar to this discussion around benefit risk analysis is how can the different HTA agencies today work together based on one methodology to determine or to assess the relative effectiveness of new treatments when they reach the market in order to inform subsequent decisions on access, leaving the aspects that are around economic value and other more local specific issues such as social values as well to the national system and still to the national HTA or the national other agencies that are involved. But what can they do on this clinical aspect of the HTA, the relative effectiveness, whether they can do that together? I think they have done pilots, and my member companies of FPR have been engaged with UNETA in the so-called Joint Action 2 to do these pilots. They have done 5 with the companies, and now with Joint Action 3, which will start, what we've heard now, the latest in June, there is the ambition to do many more of these joint assessments. I think from an FPR perspective, member companies are really positive towards this move, and we fully support this attempt to join forces on these type of European assessment. But what we see is that there is a big gap still today in terms of what is done in the European collaboration and what is used in national access decisions and pricing and reimbursement decisions. So what we are saying as FPA, what is really important for us moving forward is that we are fully on board this initiative. We would like to see more European assessments, but we would also like to see that European reports are fully integrated in the basis for national access decisions.
The history of regulation in Europe has been characterized by harmonization, even convergence. Can harmonization or convergence as concepts be applied today to HTA and UNETA? Is there a degree of harmonization happening or going to happen, or at least convergence of HTA's views?
So I think it's coming back to this, what can be done jointly and what cannot be done jointly. And what they have tried so far is what we support as well as industry of what can be done jointly is the clinical aspect of HTA. So it's this, if you look at the UNETA core model, you know, they have this these different domains that they qualify as part of an HTA. The first four domains is really what we see can be done jointly, and it's what we call, you know, European relative efficacy assessment. So it's based on data from clinical trials, so mostly efficacy data. You are trying to establish what the added value in terms of added efficacy a product brings compared to the available treatments, and so the comparators that are available throughout Europe. There are ways to deal with the fact that there are different comparators throughout Europe, but that you can handle, let's say, with different methodologies. So I think that there is recognition that's something that can be, I don't know if harmonize is the right word, or but at least something that can be done together. But what cannot be done together is, for example, cost-effectiveness evaluation, because that's really very closely linked to costs, to the organization of the healthcare system.
The local economies of individual member states,
exactly.
For example.
Exactly. So this is not something that we would see in the foreseeable future could be done, harmonized or standardized at the European level.
Another question. Several sessions here at the Euro meeting in other themes address incorporating real-world evidence into clinical research, clinical trials. Will this development impact HTAs, and if so, how?
So it will definitely impact HTAs. There is actually a session just after we speak on this specific topic in the HTA theme. And I think the title is, should HTA be based on RCTs or real-world data or both?
An excellent question.
Yes.
What is the answer?
What is the answer? We will hear from the speakers, and Professor Parni is chairing this session. But what I can say is that, you know, as you said, this is several themes are addressing this topic, and it just shows that, again, this is a trend, something that everybody wants to leverage, the availability of data that we have. We have the experiences, or the data has potentially always been there, but with different techniques, we have now the ability to get this data out much more easily. So we should definitely use it. What we see is that there is an increasing trend to monitor the performance of products over time, to say that we don't want to have a one-off decision, but we want to be able to review not only in terms of safety, which is today what the regulators do, and they monitor closely with, which is very important, whether you see some additional adverse events and so on. But what we see now, the trend is really to say, also from the payer side, I don't want to pay for a product indefinitely, let's say. I want to be sure that the performance is actually over time what has been promised, because what we promise or what we assume will be the performance of a product at launch is obviously based on assumptions, and these assumptions, you could only verify them over time. And whereas in the past, maybe there was not the tools to do that, we see that more and more we have the possibility through real-world evidence is one of the concepts that that can help there. So that could really allow to monitor and to follow products over time, and therefore to reassess, to reconsider whether the assumptions that were there at the beginning about So what we were saying, relative efficacy at the beginning becomes relative effectiveness over time, because then it's not anymore these assumption and RCT data. But if you use real world evidence and you actually get information from the patients and how they react and how different it is, because you don't have anymore the exclusion-inclusion criteria from trials, so you have a variety of patients which you didn't have maybe before. You will have also the behavior of the patient which will impact on the effectiveness of the pharmaceuticals, of the medicines, obviously. So all this you can then hopefully, through the various techniques that we have now to gather this evidence, that can feed back into this evaluation and monitoring of the performance of products. And that would hopefully help to come to a situation where we would really pay for outcomes for pharmaceuticals in the future, rather than pay for pills and have a decision on how much you reimburse for a specific pharmaceutical. And then that would be a decision, a fixed decision, but we would enter more into this. We want to monitor the performance, and based on the patient outcomes, then we will consider what is the right value also in terms of monetary value to put on the product. And that's very much linked to this adaptive pathways concept, which gathers, let's say, all the different words. So it's not any, I think it's a concept that tries to bridge the development, the regulatory, the HTA, and the payer words. And it's very much linked to this staged approach, right, and monitoring, right, approach, where real-world evidence is needed. And it's needed for everything. It's needed for the regulators. It's needed for the HTAs. It's needed for the payers. It's even needed for development, because then you learn for future development, because you might want to use a product that is already approved or repurpose it. And from the real-world evidence, you will learn things that you might not learn in trials.
Let's unpack this a little bit more. With real-world evidence continuing to provide additional evidence of effectiveness, mm-hmm. is it possible that the value of a medicine that's been approved and used for a number of years could be perceived as declining or maybe rising over time, and that the associated price of that medicine might go down or up depending on what real-world evidence provides over a number of years? And is the industry prepared to cope with this?
I think that's the ideal, is really that you would have what we see today in the regulatory world with conditional approval, which is already something that is using real-world evidence, sure. because you have a conditional approval, conditional on further evidence generation, and evidence from the real world is one of the options that is available. So in adaptive pathways and all these discussions, it's about linking conditional approval to conditional reimbursement. And as you say, that if you then prove that, or you just see that the effectiveness is predicted, the assumption of effectiveness based on efficacy data is proven or contradicted, or it's actually better than you thought or worse than you thought, then normally, I mean, in an ideal world, again, then it would lead to up or down in terms of reimbursement levels. I think industry is very much on board this concept, but it's about now finding the way, you know, how we can make that happen in terms of mechanics, let's say, of the reimbursement system. Is not easy to find a solution. And I think from the payer side, it's also the concern, how does it actually work and how do we get there so that we don't end up, from an industry perspective, we would really not like to end up in a situation where when the effectiveness goes down, let's say, or the predicted effectiveness is not reached, then prices go down. And I think then it would be relatively easy to get there. But on the other side, if we don't get to a situation, if the predicted effectiveness is actually lower than the real effectiveness and the product features better than expected, then we would also obviously like to see some return for the company, because that should go up and down. So I think that's more difficult maybe to get the system to agree to that.
So work in progress.
Yes.
I have one more question, and that is the following. Much has been spoken and written about increased patient involvement in pharmaceutical research, development, and regulation. It's a very hot topic here at the Euro meeting, as you know. Are there similar or related initiatives for increased patient involvement in HTA?
So definitely patient involvement in HTA is also a topic that is very much discussed. And I think similarly to patient involvement in the regulatory context, what is really important is to make sure that the analysis that is conducted by HT agencies or by for the purpose of the HT review takes into account the views of the patient. What I mean is that similarly, then for benefit risk evaluation for an HT, you need to determine what is the right patient population, what are the outcomes that we are trying to measure, and so on and so forth. And there, it's the same question. So who's going to determine these aspects? And that's where I think that there is this discussion around how can we get the patient perspective better integrated. So, for example, for outcome, that we have really patient-relevant outcomes that are measured. From the HTA and payer side, I think there is really this wish that it needs to be patient-relevant outcomes that are presented, because that's what is relevant in the end for the healthcare system. And then it's about, again, how do you make sure that the trials that you design are actually can feature that in. So patients are very important, especially I would say when we talk about scientific advice, when we have the opportunity to discuss with multiple parties, and including the regulators and the HTAs, there is more and more parallel scientific advice about these key aspects of trials and the trial design. Patients there have a key role to play to also voice what is important for them, what should be measured that matters to them, rather than just as a theoretical measurement framework. So I think it's a relatively similar questions from the regulatory side and from the HTA side about the role of the patient. And I would say it's not only about patient involvement, it's also about clinician involvement. It's basically involving those that are most directly affected by then the decision that will be taken, so that they can also share their views about the comparators, for example. So we have this difficulty when it's about this collaboration on HTA, as I said earlier. There are multiple comparators because practices are different today. So who's best to indicate and to inform the discussion about what is the right comparator? It should be the patient, who are the ones that take the standard treatment today, and the clinicians, who are the ones who are prescribing the standard treatments today. So we should not forget. So patients and clinicians, I think, as the primary users of pharmaceuticals and prescribers of pharmaceuticals, should be directly involved in these type of study design issues.
Does the industry that you represent, the pharmaceutical industry, feel positive about these parallel advice mechanisms that include regulators, HTA, patients, clinicians, and the industry itself? Is this working? From the industry's point of view, is it working?
Yes. So the short answer is yes. I think that there have been these pilots at the EMA, and they have been pilots also from the UNESA side to try and see how to best design a process to have all the people in the room to discuss study design and to discuss development plans. And companies have been very interested in these opportunities and have really asked to take advantage of these opportunities as much as possible. And I think actually, if you look at the UNETA pilots, they had more companies lined up than available slots, because there was also some resource constraints. So it is highly interesting for the companies, because it has a concrete, direct impact on the way they design and they organize their own work. So it can have a very, very quick impact on the internal company decision-making and the company way of working. So in that sense, it's highly appreciated, and it's something that companies hope that will really become a standard process, because it's been labeled as pilot until now. So it should become hopefully a sustainable mechanism that is available for companies. And from a session that I was just now, actually, Jane Mosley from the EMA was presenting about the EMA experience, and it seems that they are through Joint Action 3, they're going to really discuss about the sustainability of these mechanisms, which we fully support.
Very good. Thank you. This concludes our time together. I appreciate your speaking with the AA Global Forum today, Edith Frenois, and good luck. And thank you very much also for being one of our content editors for Global Forum.
Thank you very much. Thank you.